It is time for our monthly segment, The Crime Traveler, with Ed Prucci, who is usually News Talk 1010's chief legal analyst, but wearing a different hat tonight, wearing the vacation hat. I think I'm the only person who gets to see you not wearing a suit. He is dressed, by the way, everybody.
I'm dressed. I'm just not wearing a suit. That's true. Today, I spent the whole day at the office in something much less exciting than what we're going to be talking about now, or at least much less enjoyable, let's put it that way.
But you're always walking around to nicely dressed in a suit, I guess because you're always 5 minutes away from court.
Yeah, usually the next stop after I do something over here is a courthouse somewhere, so I'm just always bouncing back and forth. But tonight, I am free and focused.
Perfect. So for people who are hearing you on this show for the first time, you come in once a month and detail some of your travels as the crime traveler because you do a lot of traveling. Have you always traveled this much?
No, it's funny. If you go back to my history, so until I met my wife, travel for me typically meant that my family was moving from one city to another.
Oh, wow.
My dad was an academic, and so he was doing a master's degree and some postgraduate work, and that meant very often that if we were traveling, quote unquote, it was like, all right, kids, pick it up. You're going to a new school. We're in Saskatoon now. Or, you know, I was born in London, Ontario, my sister in Saskatoon. We did time in Montreal, in Winnipeg, even in Madrid, Spain for a little while. So I was 12 years old, I associated travel with, we've got to start all over again, which was a little bit, partially responsible for my outgoing personality because you got to make friends quick when you're moving around that fast. And then we kind of just stuck around Toronto and didn't do a lot of travel. And then my wife likes to joke, when I met her, we started doing some tentative stuff. They were fairly big travelers, her family. We went to Florida the first time. I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. I love Florida. It's the most exotic, most amazing place. Next thing you know, we were in the Bahamas, then Costa Rica. And I started realizing, wow, this planet's big. Yeah. And so I was very badly bitten by the travel bug and really hooked. And I love this time of year, right? We're now, end of March. And so we've often talked about some shorter vacations, what you can do in 3 or 4 days, what you can do here and there. Now is the time where I start thinking about what's going to be, the big one. Summer, the kids are out of school. A lot of people are able to get a little bit more time away. Maybe you don't have to only take a week. Maybe you can take all that vacation that you've banked up over the years and go away for 2 or even more weeks if you're really lucky. But it's the opportunity to plan something that's really a little bit more off the beaten track. So the first thing I'll say to people, which has nothing to do with Ecuador, which is what we've been promoting all day, but I discovered this just a little while ago, it's Canada's 150th birthday, as I think a lot of people know. We're coming up to that important marker. And Parks Canada is giving out to anyone who asks for it a free discovery pass.
I think we have one in our home already.
So,
my son.
Yeah, I signed up for that. Yep. And I told some people about it. No, very few people had heard, which is unfortunate because it's a phenomenal opportunity. It basically means go to the Parks Canada website, go on Google, Bing, whatever your search engine you want. Just type in Parks Canada Discovery Pass. It'll be the first thing that comes up. You can sign up right away. And that pass gets you free access to every federal national park across the country. So what a great way.
It's pretty
amazing. A great opportunity to, explore in your own backyard.
Yeah, for sure. So what we're going to do tonight is we are going to start a two-part series to be concluded in April on Ecuador. So why? Okay, Ecuador, why would people choose Ecuador of all places to go?
Well, it's the middle of the world. Look, Ecuador gets its name because of the equator that runs right through it. Now, the equator runs through a lot of places, but Ecuador has really sort of marketed and marked that largely because it's one of the few places where when the equator runs through it, you're actually relatively close to a highly populated city. Quito, which is the capital, is very close to the actual center of the planet, that sort of belt that goes all the way around the Earth, which makes for a really interesting thing because when you first land in Quito, first of all, Quito is the second highest from an altitude perspective capital anywhere in the world, right after La Paz, Bolivia. So the first thing you'll notice if you're a land-loving Canadian like myself is you're going to feel dizzy, you're going to feel tired, you're going to feel exhausted very, very fast, and you're probably going to have trouble sleeping. And people say, that's crazy. Come on, it's just another town. It's not. It's at nearly 10,000 feet altitude, way up in the mountains, which by Ecuadorian standards is sort of only midway up. But those of us who are not used to that altitude, you will feel it. So allow yourself a little bit of extra time to acclimate to that. But then very close to the city is, the center of the Earth, latitude 0000, which is neat. And there's a couple of things that the country has done around beyond that. So that there was an official geodesic mission that the French performed back in the 1700s to find where is the actual middle of the earth. And they came to Quito and they marked a spot they called the Mitad del Mundo. They put up a nice monument. You can go see it. There's some stores around it. And then it turns out in the 80s with the advent of very cheap handheld GPS technology that they were off by a bit. At not much, but by a bit. And a very fortunate private landholder not far away realized, wait a second, it's my house that's the middle of the earth, as it turns out. And so they turned it into a very, I call it adorable kitsch. Some people will hate it, but it is a very bizarre sort of mishmash of experiments that have absolutely no scientific validity whatsoever. But they'll try to tell you that here and only here, you know, your toilet can flush both directions.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Or you can balance an egg on the head of a pin.
Yeah.
And so they do all these adorable, cute things. And it is kind of a neat experience. I think it's worth going out there and seeing, and certainly a lot of photo ops there.
I thought south of the equator, the toilets flush the other way.
I can't honestly say whether that's true or not. I can say we conducted a variety of experiments with their quote-unquote naturalist guide, and I was not convinced.
So if you go to Ecuador, what kind of vacation are you going for? What are you looking for? What are you getting?
So there's a lot of opportunities. I mean, Quito itself is a phenomenal old colonial city. So old Quito, when you go to downtown Quito, has a really great cobblestone Spanish feel, old churches, old buildings, a classic Spanish central square. And it was a place that, you know, about a decade or two decades ago was actually pretty dangerous. And I think people would have said, don't go. And that's been cleaned up quite a bit. So you can definitely walk around some beautiful shops there, you know, Latin music and all of those things, and very much enjoy that. If you're an adventure traveler, as I am, there's tons to do in and around Ecuador. I mean, Ecuador is one of several countries that has the Amazon running through it. And so your entry to the Amazon is in a place called Baños, sort of the gateway to the Amazon, at least the Ecuadorian Amazon. There's just a gorgeous resort there that I highly recommend. It's called the Luna Runtun, L-U-N-A R-U-N-T-U-N, right up in the mountain, overlooking a spectacular valley. And from there, you've got your waterfalls, you've got whitewater rafting, you've got your river cruises, you've got your rappelling, zip lining, all of the sort of adrenaline rush stuff that you can do. But the cultural opportunities, the thermal hot springs, all of those things that are there. And there's also some phenomenal museums. So if you're an art lover, the Otavalo Market, which is in the center of Ecuador, is a place that you can stroll, pick up art, pick up food, really just an incredible opportunity. Very affordable too. Once you make your way there, a little hard to get to in terms of a direct flight from Canada. You'll probably be going through Miami if you're flying from Toronto or, you know, in our hood, Montreal, something like that. But just tremendous, tremendous opportunities.
All right. Ed Brucci is here. It's The Crime Traveler. We're going to continue talking about Ecuador. He's also got a word of caution regarding children's passports. That and more when we return.
Chugging, got my chips cashed in. Keep chugging, life to do the man together.
The Nightside continues with Barb DiGiulio on News Talk 1010.
Welcome back to the show. It is our monthly Crime Traveler. Ed Prucci is here. We're not talking legal stuff. We're talking travel.
Phew.
And tonight we're talking Ecuador. Yeah, this is your like one night off.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
One night off a month. If you have any questions for Ed regarding Ecuador, regarding travel, 416-872-1010, text us at 71010. Someone was texting in because they heard there had been a serious earthquake in Quito about a year ago.
Yeah, so there was a fairly serious earthquake. Quito wasn't the epicenter of it, but it did get hit. Now, you know, I don't know what people have sort of in their heads in terms of their expectations and how they visualize a city like Quito. So it certainly isn't Toronto from the perspective of being, you know, a completely first world nation with 70-story skyscrapers and such. But equally, I wouldn't call it, you know, like a small island basket case where everything is kind of thatched wood huts. It's a very modern, very advanced city. So while there were injuries, there were damage, there were deaths, Quito bounced back, and Ecuador in general bounced back from that very, very quickly. In fact, you know, they handle things really remarkably. And maybe we'll talk about this more next month. But one of the times I was in the Galapagos, I've had the pleasure to be there a couple of times, was the time of the big tsunami in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Which, believe it or not, actually has had a significant impact on water all around the world. And mm-hmm. Of course, we were on a ship when we found out about it, and the Ecuadorian Navy came out, and we had to deal with certain things to make sure that there wasn't damage to us, but the islands were in part affected. What I would say to people is don't be scared off by the earthquake. Everything is gone and passed. Everything is rebuilt. It's a wonderful place to go, a relatively safe place to go, as I say, especially if you speak a little Spanish. You'll get get far. And if you like the taste of guinea pig, I never got around to trying it, but I was stuck in a traffic jam. So the way, you know, the way if you were at a ball game, peanuts, popcorn, caramel corn, there's guys going up and down in a traffic jam offering you peanuts, popcorn, and what they call kui, which is in fact guinea pig on a stick. So,
wow. Mark Tang, would you try it?
Mark that
guinea
one down.
Pig on a stick? Yeah, he would try it.
He's probably chewing on one right now.
No, Ben says no, absolutely not. But yeah, I mean, there are interesting and different things to try. And you said there are some amazing sites to see, museums to see. You mentioned a terrific waterfall.
Yeah, so let's sort of run through a couple of things. If you're in the Banos area, and I was talking about that resort, the Luna Runtun Resort, about 20 kilometers from there is something that the locals, I won't butcher it in Spanish, but in English translates basically to the Devil's Cauldron. And it really lives up to the funky Hollywood style name. You've got to hike your way through through the jungle, a fairly easy hike because there is a path. But then you can work your way up kind of a stone cut path that I don't know who built it, frankly, whether it's the owner of that particular location, whether it's part of the National Park Service. But you can actually get up behind this enormous sort of twin-tongued waterfall. And the reason they call it the Devil's Cauldron is because the steam, the sort of spray from it is all over the place, and you're in this kind of cloud until you get up to the top and then you look down at the waterfall. It's really, really quite spectacular. And it's those kinds of things that are just so accessible. You know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm some sort of expert climber or that I'm belaying my way through, you know, Bond-esque in the jungle. These are very, very accessible things to do. I was there with my then, I think, 7-year-old daughter, and she climbed up to the top with me. And when I went with my brother-in-law on a separate trip, we ended up on a mountain called Cotopaxi, which is a volcano. So you've got this beautiful caldera, the circle that goes around the top of the volcano where the lava would be spurting out if it were erupting at that moment. Of course, it wasn't. But you can walk up almost like a wheelchair ramp. And they were, I mean, if you're Ecuadorian, there were families pushing strollers, carrying kids on their shoulder. I say if you're Ecuadorian, because if you're North American, of course, that altitude is an absolute killer. So you're kind of on your hands and knees crawling up, and some 70-year-old guy is going to be carrying a kid on his shoulders, and that kid on the shoulders has another kid on the shoulders, and they're running up past you. But when you get up to 5,000 meters, so we're talking about 16,000 feet of elevation, extraordinarily high, there's a little hut there and everyone's hanging around. You can order a soup, have a hot chocolate.
Wow.
It's frozen year round. So you're up on a glacier and the view is just absolutely spectacular.
What's the weather like in Ecuador?
Well, so because it's on the equator, nothing changes, right? Time doesn't really change. It's not like the sun sets earlier or later. It's the same all year round. And you're talking about, roughly speaking, it is tropical. So you're talking about high 20s, low 30s all the time. Now, it is cooler up in the mountains because just of the altitude, but it's never going to get cold. You will see snow and glaciers up at the tops of the mountains, but you're not going to see that in cities like Quito and such. But if the mountains aren't your bag, you head down into the valleys. So you'll pass through cloud forests, which are high altitude forests. And you'll get to whitewater rafting on the Rio Blanco, which is also an easy day trip from Quito. So you can do all of those things there before getting to the real gem, which we'll talk about next month, which is the Galapagos. But I encourage people not to, as so many people do, fly into Quito, get on a plane, fly out, get to the Galapagos, and skip, you know, that phenomenal introduction, because the two trips I consider completely different and completely separate. Ecuador, mainland Ecuador, is not at all like the Galapagos. In fact, nothing is like the Galapagos. So there's really nothing like it. And when you're on mainland Ecuador, appreciate and enjoy what you're seeing, you know, there.
Do you ever do guided tours?
Do I provide guides, you mean, or do I hire guides?
No, do you hire guides?
Absolutely, all the time. I think that's an enormous thing. I mean, you should never have the arrogance of thinking I can show myself around a place that I haven't been.
You get so much more out of it.
Absolutely. So we do guided tours all the time. We had a guide in colonial Ecuador, and usually I try to find somebody local, but you can certainly work with companies that are here in Toronto who will then hire local for you to make life a lot easier. We'll be talking about some of those in future shows. I'm working with some companies now that have just tremendous access to local people all around the world. So, you know, when we did Cotopaxi, I was not, even though the locals are doing this, no problem, I wasn't just going to head up to 5,000 meters and see if I made it back down.
Yeah.
We hired a guide and he drove us out there. He told us about the mountain. He told us the routes. He told us what to expect. And then he clambered off like some sort of mountain goat and occasionally sort of looked back to see if I and my brother-in-law were still alive. And interestingly, I don't know if you've had any experience with altitude sickness. It has nothing to do with your physical health. So my brother-in-law, who's a very athletic guy, was in terrific shape, was basically acting like a drunken lunatic and almost walked off the edge of a mountain just because of the way it impacted him. And, you know, I was the overweight fat guy kind of pulling him back and then thinking, oh, well, if he doesn't make it, he doesn't make it. I'm too tired. That exhaustion is a really interesting thing, to feel. And you could do it in a safe environment there because, as I say again, you're not mountain climbing in the sense of putting one hand above one hand and trying to find a little hand holding a grip or working your belaying rope. You're just walking up a ramp, but you're tired walking up that ramp. And all around you are the sights of the mountains, the lagoons, the ice, the fire. It's really incredible.
Before we go, because we're almost out of time, unbelievably, there was a lesson that a Montreal family learned about signing children's passports.
So I learned about this before that article, but when I saw it, I said, you know what? This is something we have to talk about. Canadian passports, if you read very, very carefully, so your kids now have to have a passport. That wasn't always the case. They used to just travel on one of the parents' passports. You could attach them to your mom's or your dad's passport. Now they've got to have their own passport. And so people would assume, well, there's a dotted line there that says signature. Well, how's my 5 or 7 or 8 year old going to sign that necessarily? And you're supposed to, if you read the fine print, leave it blank. The problem is not everyone at every country, and I'm including American border and customs agents, will often tell you, wait a second, this is supposed to be signed. I'll hand you a pen and they'll expect you to sign it right there. That's a problem. This family was turned back because they had signed, not the kid, they had signed on behalf of a child. So the rule is under 11, the passport must remain unsigned completely no matter what. Over 11, the child can sign, but you can't sign for that child. So the best practice is a child's passport, leave it blank. And if somebody, whether official or otherwise, is telling you you got to sign, hold your horses there. Call it up on the website. There's a web page specifically on Passport Canada that talks about that. Make sure they understand it because you could get sent back once you do that. You're voiding the passport.
Yeah, you'll void the passport. Then you have to get new ones reissued. Ed Prucci, thank you so much for this. Next month, we're going to do the Galapagos. So
yes,
we'll continue.
So stay tuned. If you thought this was fun, that's going to be even more fun.
All right. Ed Prucci with the Crime Traveler, the last Tuesday of every month here on News Talk 1010.